Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, and Dr. Katie Eastman. The Best Ever You Show is here to help you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products, and businesses, real life stories with this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. And now, here are your hosts, Elizabeth and Katie.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. We're having a pretty crazy start to this show today. Everybody dialed in at the very last second. So, Katie, are you there? I can hear you.
I'm here.
I made it. And Kelly, are you there, maybe?
I am. Oh, yeah. Sorry to give you any stress, but I'm here.
Yeah, we were both like, I'm just sitting back looking at the queue going, I'm going to be talking to myself for an hour. You guys are killing me.
Sorry.
Anyway, I'm just teasing. Welcome to our show, and hello, everyone, and thank you for listening to the Best Ever You Show. We are so very proud that you're with us, and we have a really, really cool guest with us today. We have Kelly. I didn't have a chance to go through your name with you before we went on air, but I think it's Bulkley. Is that correct?
Yes,
okay,
exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so we have one of the authors of Children's Dreams, Understanding the Most Memorable Dreams and Nightmares of Childhood, Kelly Bulkley, with us. And is it your mom that wrote this with you? Is that right?
Yeah, we co-authored it. It's our second book that we've co-authored, and a lot of fun putting this together.
Oh, that's so much fun. Yeah, Katie and I are just on the tail end of co-authoring a book called Percolate, Let Your Best Self Filter Through. And it comes out through Hay House in probably around August or September time frame. And we know what crazy stress that is to collaborate.
Yeah, it is. But good collaborative energies too. There can be a, you know, some is more than the parts. So that can be good.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about yourself. It sounds like you're the author of a bunch of books based on psychology, religion, and dreams. Is that correct?
Yeah. I've been interested in dreams for most of my life and researching and studying and writing about it. And I'm also a parent. My wife and I have raised three children, and my mother has been the grandmother for our children. And over the years, we've just been watching their dreams and talking about them. And this book kind of had its seeds in those family conversations.
Yeah, Katie, I'd love for you to. Katie's a therapist, and do you have any expertise, Katie, in the dream world?
Well, it's interesting because I definitely have experience working with dreams, but the one I'm thinking of is my daughter, who when she came back from China, when we adopted her from China, had these recurring dreams. So I'm really interested in hearing a lot about what you have to say. I have kind of a personal interest in it as well as professional.
Yeah, and so did my husband and I. We were both just talking before we went on air about your book and dreams, and we're the parents of four boys who are 12, 14, 16, and 18. And we have a little 12-year-old who will come running down the hallway sometimes at night and still, you know, like leap into bed with us based on some nightmare or dream. And so I have a personal interest in this as well. So tell us, when a child talks about a vivid nightmare or dream, I don't know if they're one and the same, or nighttime dream or nightmare or dream, all of them, it's really easy for us to respond with, as an adult, it's just a dream. But that's not so great, is it?
Well, it's a natural impulse because at that moment, and you know, children have nightmares sort of as a normal part of growing up and just normal child development. So pretty much every parent at some point, you know, has the pleasure of waking up in the middle of the night and, you know, your child is screaming and they're just crying or they're very upset. And so a parent's natural instinct is to try to comfort your child, you know, and you cuddle them and you hug them and you tell them it's okay. And, you know, if you're turning on the lights and say, wow, you're here, you know, you're not dreaming anymore. But if you add that extra phrase of, oh, don't worry, it was just a dream, that from our perspective, it's not so much that it's bad. It's just that it's missing an opportunity, because what dreams offer us, you know, this is our basic argument, is a window into a child's budding imagination, kind of their inner creative powers kind of stretching out and seeing what they can do. And so, you know, we prefer to do everything you can to comfort your child in that really scary moment of where they're, you know, they're still kind of in the grip of those nightmare emotions and such. But then maybe the next morning, the next day, when things have calmed down a bit, then if you haven't said before, you know, it was just a dream, it makes it a little easier to come back to it and say, wow, that was a pretty intense dream. What was going on there, do you think? And, you know, can you maybe draw a picture to show me what was happening, or different ways of opening up a conversation with the child's own imagination. That's our ultimate goal in you know, kind of what we're talking about in this book.
Do you talk about how do you describe to a parent what the difference is between a nightmare and a recurring dream?
Yeah. Well, nightmares are you know, kind of in the eye of the beholder in some ways, because I mean I recently did a research study of this wasn't a child, but like a 20-something guy, and several of his dreams seemed like nightmares to me because they had lots of aggression and bad things happening. But then he told me, no, they actually were kind of enjoyable adventures and fantasies. And this guy happened to be a video game player, and that kind of infiltrated his dreams. And so sometimes things can seem nightmarish that actually aren't experienced as such, and other times a dream can seem very innocuous, but the dreamer can be just, you know, paralyzed with terror because of it. So it's really what, you know, and speaking of children's dreams, you know, the main test is how are they reacting, and what is their emotional response to the dream. And sometimes it's not so much that something scary happened in the dream, although that can happen. But it's just like I think you mentioned a moment ago, sometimes just really intense recurrent dreams are just scary just because they happen. It's like, whoa, what what was that? Where did that come from? What's that all about? That's the reaction I think that we really encourage parents to try to, you know, create a safe space for a child to kind of get comfortable with the idea that, yeah, you know, you're a dreamer. Your mind, when you go to sleep, it's still active. It's still doing things, and you know, vivid dreams are one of the things that it does, and that's part of you, and that's okay.
Speaking of that right there, I think it's a really good, maybe a really good tool here for parents all around, or grandparents, or anyone listening, to really understand why we dream. Could we back up just a little bit?
Sure.
And just explain, even as adults, I mean, even as adults, sometimes I wake up and I'm like, why am I, what was that about? Why did I think that? I'm like, was that a past life or a wish? Or a, you know,
yeah.
I'm like, what is that all about? And
yeah.
so
yeah.
if you don't have a great explanation for that as an adult, it can be really hard to say, that's where, you know, oh, it's just a dream, don't worry about it. Instead
right.
of maybe saying, well, we dream because.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, a simple way of putting it is, you know, kind of turning it into a different kind of question, which would be, you know, why do children play? And mm-hmm. in our book, we really compare dreaming to a kind of play that children engage in, and adults too, when we go to sleep. So everything that play does in terms of helping develop cognitive skills, sort of emotional self-awareness, expanding creative imagination, all the things all the roles that play offers in child development. I think dreaming is doing many of the same things in terms of working through, you know, difficult experiences and the hopes and the fears and the aspirations that children feel in a space that allows kind of a free exploration of possibilities, but without necessarily having to commit or suffer consequences if something bad happens. So, you know, boiling that down, I guess, to more kind of functional language, researchers often say that dreaming promotes emotional balance. It promotes long-term memory and learning, just in the way that we sort of process experiences for the day. So dreaming, there's all sorts of functions along those lines. But I think for parents, the simplest way to sort of boil it down is dreaming is a kind of play. The play that our minds engage in while we're asleep. And if you think children's play is important, and I hope you do, you know, this would be my advice, think of dreaming as something, you know, kind of a kindred spirit to that.
That is so cool. I love that. As a child therapist, I'm all over that. Because children express themselves differently than adults because they can't do it directly. They don't know what, aren't able to say, I feel this because of that.
Exactly.
They express it, and they express it creatively. And I love that comparison. So if that's the case, then how is a parent, when you wake up in the morning and your child is, or in the middle of the night, your child's had this experience and you're trying to help them make sense of it, how do you do it?
Yeah, well, it's as with play, there's kind of that there's a fragility to the kind of conversational space, I guess, you need. You need to be, you know, not too serious, not like, okay, let's sit down and analyze that dream and interpret all the pieces of it like, you know, your kid would run out of the door. But you don't want to just sort of be, you want to show like some respect and some like genuine curiosity. So, you know, I think when a child has a really bad nightmare, like we're talking here, I think it's much easier to talk about that if you've already got kind of an ongoing family context for talking about dreams where, you know, just every now and then a parent, you know, might ask a child, hey, you know, did you dream last night? Or, you know, like child sleeps in on a weekend, you say, hey, you know, wow, good night's sleep. Do you have any dreams last night? And periodically, parents might consider sharing a dream or two with their children just to show that it's like, you know, hey, we're all dreamers. I'm a dreamer just like you're a dreamer. And this is a two-way street. And, you know, kids really take their cues from their parents and from adults. So if they see parents taking dreams seriously, that's going to go a long way towards taking their own dreams seriously.
Now, have you ever heard of a parent so exhausted that they don't dream?
Oh, sure. And kids,
I don't know
too.
That person.
Oh,
at
my
all.
Gosh, yes.
I don't.
Well, it's, I mean, at one level, you know, researchers, we can say, you know, when we go to sleep at night, the brain-mind system remains active in all sorts of ways. And so we're all kind of dreaming all through the night at a certain level. And even people who remember, you know, say two or three dreams each morning, even those people are forgetting the vast majority of what goes on in the mind during the night. So we really, you know, try not to get people like, you know, all worked up about the quantity of dream recall. Like, oh, if I have to remember X number of dreams to, or my child has to remember X number of dreams to be healthy or whatever. It's much more kind of creating an open space in one's waking awareness for whatever happens to come, because we, you know, we really can't control our dreams. That's one of the magical things about them, I think. But it's more a matter of just kind of opening one's conscious attention to the possibility that, hey, if a dream happens to cross the threshold from sleeping into waking awareness, I'm going to ponder that a little bit. I'm going to play with it a little bit. And with children, a lot of times that's all they need, that little bit of kind of permission, just like, yeah, that's an okay thing, sure. And their own dreams, you know, will take it from there.
Did you, I thought you were going to ask something, Katie, sorry. It was your turn.
Oh. I was going to ask, can you give us an example of how this works? Can you give us an example of a dream experience with a child?
Sure. So one of the examples we talk about in the book, a girl, and this is someone who's remembering the dream much later. She was in her, I guess, 20s probably when she told me this dream, but it came from when she was, I think, 5 or 6, like young, kind of end of preschool, beginning of like kindergarten and such. And she had a dream where her house was on fire. and her beloved stuffed animal, like a I think it was a bunny. It's almost like a Velveteen Rabbit kind of theme going on, where this bunny was on a couch and was being threatened by the fire. And the girl said that in the dream she knew she could have saved the bunny, and yet she didn't. Like there was a sort of an intention in the dream, like I know I could do this, and yet I am not going to save the bunny. And she woke up and she said that she was puzzled and remained puzzled by this dream for quite some time. And as we talked about it, it kind of came out that dream was her own, you know, sort of at that transitional time, kind of from preschool into grade school, kind of moving from just the family world into kind of a bigger social world, that her bunny, her stuffed bunny, was kind of this great symbol for her of what she loved about her own childhood and yet realized was now going to have to change and be transformed, that she was growing up. I mean, a lot of children's dreams really are about growing up, you know, at a certain level, because that's what they're going through. That's what's happening every moment of their days. And sometimes growing up is exciting and fun, and sometimes it's sad and there's some mourning for what's left behind. So I think she realized that dream of this stuffed bunny that she could have saved and yet didn't was a way of kind of helping her make the developmental transition beyond that world, that house. It was burning. It was being transformed. And so, you know, that's a case where I think the dream with many children's dreams, you almost don't have to do any interpretation. You don't have to like do anything with them so much as allow them to be a part of awareness and just ongoing reflection. So that's the way it worked out in her case.
I'm going to go over to the adult side of things and just ask a question there. And that's, I have a bunch of questions actually, but why sometimes do we wake up and remember our dreams? And why sometimes do we kind of go, oh, I was dreaming, and just can't quite get a grasp on what we were thinking, but we kind of have vague details? And,
yeah.
And why does that happen? Because sometimes you wake up and you're like, oh, I got to write that down. That was a great idea. I just wrote a book in my sleep or something.
I know.
And then other times you're like, I was dreaming, but I wish I could remember that.
I know.
But you know,
I know.
You were. What is that?
Well, there are a couple things. I mean, dream recall really varies from person to person and from sort of different times of life, different things happening in life. So there's a lot of mystery around that. There's also a sense in which when we're shifting from sleeping to waking, it's a really dramatic alteration of kind of the way the mind is working. And so even if you've been having a very vivid dream, dreams are often in this kind of emotional, visual, imagistic kind of language. And then we wake up and we're kind of back in our linear language mode. It's tough to make that transition. I mean, I sometimes think, I don't know if this analogy will make sense. I don't know if you ever watch like sports games, but like, you know, at the end of a, you know, really intense, say, basketball game, and the players have just been playing their hearts out, and the game ends, and like the next second, an interviewer pulls one of the players over and puts a microphone in his face and said, so how was that? What, you know, what were you thinking when you made that play? And you can just see the player's eyes like, whoa, I am not in that mode at all. Like, I can't even articulate what that was like. Like, how can you ask me that? So sometimes when we shift from sleeping to waking,
they give them 3 sentences to memorize.
yeah. Because it's very hard to do that. But what we focus this book on are precisely the dreams that there's no doubt about it, dreams that just kind of burn themselves into memory, like you couldn't forget them even if you tried. And these are the dreams that we think are really potentially powerful and inspiring for children, you know, and as they grow into adults.
Okay, we're gonna come back to that in 1 second. Katie, we need to take a break, like it's still going to be us, but we need to recognize our sponsor.
Okay.
Kelly, we have a really cool sponsor, and everybody listening, Del Amore Pasta Sauce. sponsors nice. They're awesome. They sponsor the Best Ever You Network and the Best Ever You Show. And they're a company out of Vermont. You can find them at delamori.com. You can go onto their website, and if you can find their, they have like a store locator, Katie, now. They just put it up there where you can type in the state you're in, and it'll tell you where you can find their pasta sauce. They're growing like crazy. And they were just featured in Cooking Light magazine. And Frank Delamori is the owner of the company and a really good buddy of mine. And Katie, your kiddo eats pasta sauce now.
I'm a big fan. My kiddo would not eat tomato sauce at all until Delamori, and she just loves it. So yeah, it's definitely on our table once a week at least.
Yeah, ours too. So, and it really is good stuff. And I think what I love about it, and this isn't a pitch or anything like that, it's all sincere, is that I have really bad food allergies, and the ingredients are so pure, and that's why I love it. It doesn't have any added sugar. It's just basic pasta sauce, and it tastes very homemade and everything like that. So visit delamori.com. You can also find them on Facebook and Twitter, and we'll move off of them before we start dreaming about food. and I have a question. I have a bunch of questions actually, but I'll keep going here, and then Katie, take a turn and interrupt me. But do you know how sometimes in your dreams, and kids do this, and I think adults do this too. I know I do this all the time. You can conjure up a place. And remember, you know, it's like, where did that place come from? I've never seen that before. I've never been there. I've never, you know, house, a place, or whatever. And it comes out of nowhere. And where does something like that come from? If you've never, do you know what I mean? How do you put together stuff like that in your head and you've never even seen it, been there, done that? And it's like, where did that come from? And where did that house come from? And I have a recurring dream of a brown house on a hill on a lake, and I've never seen this house before in my life. I have no idea what it is.
And yet it comes back to you
always,
like in the same basic. Wow.
Yeah, same dream. Not every day or anything like that, but you know, every maybe once a year or twice a year, I know this house and I'm there and I'm writing and I'm doing, but I've never seen that house.
Wow. That's
what
so
that?
Fun. Well, I mean, my academic training is in sort of history of religions and religious studies. And one of the things I've noticed in studying dreams in different periods of history and different cultures is how often people have dreams like that. And it leads to beliefs in, you know, spirit worlds and gods and goddesses and deities and like dreams like that that really make people feel like, wow, I'm no longer in my ordinary life.
Yeah.
I'm no longer in my ordinary world.
Yeah, nowhere near, there's nothing in my life at all. It's like a completely different thing. Like, that's why I'm always like, okay, where did that come from? Is that a past life or a future one?
Right.
Am I supposed to go find this house? Or, and I have people like that, too, in my dreams. Yeah. And it's like, okay, who's that? I've never seen you before.
Right. Well, it's you know, sort of the historical context is, you know, there have been people who have had those kinds of dreams, and it does lead to these, you know, sort of metaphysical thoughts of like, whoa, you know, how does this waking reality relate to my dreaming realities, which seem to have just as much continuity and structure and shape and detail. Contemporary brain researchers say, well, that's just kind of showing the power of the brain, that the brain can create this internal world that's so realistic and so vivid that it's really indistinguishable from what we experience in waking. You know, those are all kind of theoretical points. What I usually do when I'm, you know, working with people in different settings with dreams like this is kind of focus more on, wow, that came from a very weird otherworldly place, but kind of pragmatically, well, what do you do there? You know, what do you experience there? What do you see there that you might not see in waking life? What, you know, happens there that might not happen in waking life? And that to me, dreams like that are kind of invitations to explore and to see what, you know, wherever that profound creativity comes from, whether it's, you know, deep within our brains or whether it's, you know, spirits and whatnot, you know, influencing us. It's bigger than just our conscious ego. And so that to me is kind of the excitement and the fun of working with dreams, is exploring what those, you know, kind of creative new realities that dreams reveal to us. That's a buzzword.
Sorry.
That's a good one.
Don't mean
one.
To be
no.
trippy, but that's just me, I guess. I don't know. Katie,
no,
go
it's really, I love what Kelly, what you just said, is because it's really the curiosity that we give ourselves with what we're doing in our dreams. And I love Carl Jung and all of his archetypes and his metaphors and all that good stuff that I learned in seminary. And when I hear Elizabeth's dream, I immediately think of, the metaphor. And Elizabeth knows I'm all about metaphor, because in the book we wrote together, I just am all over that.
The metaphor.
Yeah.
So, it's almost annoying.
Metaphor. Right, very annoying. I'm totally annoying. I own that completely.
I love it.
And because I'm always looking at things like that. But so my question is, you know, given that curiosity, a lot of people have believe myths about dreams. Like they should be dreaming X. They should be dreaming this often. They should be doing. Can you talk about that? Because I think there's a lot of myths out there about dreaming.
Yeah. Well, there is a sense that you know, there are these certain typical themes and certain, you know, people who don't dream at all. I think there's a common belief that if you don't have dream recall of a certain level, that, you know, you must be repressed or, you know, uptight or something.
Yeah.
And likewise, you know, people who have lots of dream recall and often, like, you know, kind of weird dreams. I kind of like what you're saying, like dreams that, you know, are really strange, or, you know, and we don't have to go into too salacious details, but, you know, dreams often have taboo sexual behavior and feelings and experiences that people wake up and they, you know, a common misconception is, wow, if I dream about doing it, that must mean I really want to do it, or that's like repressed in me, or I'm going crazy or something. So, you know, I think there is some gentle public education we can all do to just, you know, remind people that yes, dreams are natural and normal, and they go in all different directions. They're not bound by waking rules and moral ideas and such. But I mean, I'm glad you bring up sort of the theme of metaphor, because that's the first place I go when someone comes to me with a dream. They say, "Oh my God, I had this dream where I was doing something that, wow, I'm really kind of freaked out about." You know, you can say, "Well, that sounds like a weird experience." You know, do you think maybe there's a metaphorical dimension, that it's not literally about doing that or experiencing that, but it's about, you know, a metaphorical expression that draws upon that? And that often is actually what I think dreams are about. Dreams are profoundly metaphorical in the way they connect things that we know to things we don't know, things we wish we knew or trying to know. Just in some ways, gosh, just the most basic misconception, I guess, about dreams that we could try to correct would be that they're literal. And dreams are rarely, you know, about what they just look like on the surface. There is a metaphorical dimension that opens up, I think, much more interesting meanings, and often diminishes people's anxiety. Like, oh God, is that, you know, is that going to happen, or is that what you make of that?
Now, it says the book presents a simple and easy applied method of analyzing children's dreams. Is that something that, you know, a parent can do, or is that something we have to come to you for, or are you enabling people with the skill of being able to understand what somebody's dreams mean more?
Yeah. Well, we're really just super firm believers in the idea that because dreaming is just the most natural and normal thing that people do, we all have the wherewithal, the ability to make some sense of our dreams and to help our loved ones make some sense of their dreams. So we're really not about kind of a expert top down kind of approach. We believe that just with a few basic ideas, parents can certainly help their children explore their dreams in a safe and responsible way. I mean, of course, if it almost goes without saying, but if your child has horrible recurrent nightmares, just terrible things happening night after night, really disrupting their lives, I would certainly advise them to consult their physicians or a therapist or a counselor, somebody to check that out. But in general, this is something that's just part of being human and part of, are the way humans get along and make sense of the world, to talk about dreams and share them and explore them. So the bits of advice we offer in terms of looking at dreams, looking at the settings, looking at the sort of the progress of a plot during a dream, sort of where a dream ends, does it end with a clear resolution or is it left uncertain? A couple little ideas like that can help, but I think we all deep down have an ability to work with dreams in these ways, and that's what we're really trying to encourage people to try that out.
Can you tell us a little bit about your mom?
Sure. My dear mother, she is a retired Presbyterian minister and spiritual services provider for a hospice organization in Northern California. Our first book together was called Dreaming Beyond Death, and that was a book about the dreams and visions that come in the final, weeks and days and even hours of life. And that was based a lot on my mother's work as a hospice chaplain. And after writing that book, we thought, that was kind of the darker side of things, death and dying and such. And we happened to be reading Carl Jung's book of his on children's dreams. And it got us thinking, wouldn't it be interesting to write a book kind of about the other end of the life cycle? The dreams that kind of, initiate us into life, kind of help children come into this world and into conscious awareness, kind of as a match to the book about dreams, at the end of life, as we're kind of leaving this world and going to whatever lies next.
I'm curious, did you do any kids' dreams at end of life?
I'm trying to think. I don't know. I think the youngest, I think the youngest was probably a 20-year-old. I mean, her practice, her primary experience was with people who were sort of at the older end of things. But there's we talk about a dream of a cousin of mine who died when she was, she had leukemia in her mid-20s, which was really sad. And so we talked, one of her dreams and another, I think, 20-year-old. What prompts the question?
Well, one of the coolest things, I used to work with dying kids, and one of the most
amazing
things. Wow,
that's intense work.
Yes, it is. It is, and it's also incredibly.
Be her friend in a room of people. They don't go near her.
Yeah,
really. I'm a real downer at a cocktail party.
But
I actually really am inspired by them, and my experience with dreams was with a bereaved sibling who in his dreams, the figure that came to him in his dreams in the form of a monster turned out to be the brother who had died.
Wow.
And because of his age and development, that's what he would see. It would be monsters because that's what
sure.
they do at that age. A little boy would dream about, but it was his brother. And
wow.
over time, in the therapy that we did with him, he made peace with the monster, and the monster loved him and became part of his life and then went away and
wow.
came back when he wanted him to. And so it's really fascinating to me that even kiddos who are
yeah.
grieving and dealing with end of life have these metaphors show up and have these figures show up and I won't get into it, but there are a ton of
You guys just fascinated me. Both of you, because I would never even think of writing a book about the dreams and visions that come at the end just before death. Can you explain to me what you mean by that? Like what something like that might be?
Sure. Well, you know, this isn't something that necessarily happens in all cases and with all people, but you know, during the course of my mother's work, and she was a hospice chaplain for 10 plus years, she found that she was hearing, you know, a lot of these stories where people, you know, at well after the terminal diagnosis, you know, so it's like there's no more, you know, hoping for a cure, you know, will the treatment work? No, this is like, you know, end of life, that people would often have an immediate reaction of anger, depression. You know, there's often kind of a suicidal moment. I'm like, well, geez, if I'm going to die, why not just kill myself and be done with it? But what we found in looking at a lot of cases where people that she worked with, that kind of angry, depressed phase sometimes passed, and almost a new stage of development, you know, more kind of spiritual development really than kind of a physical development, but a new kind of final phase of life would emerge where the person could kind of, you know, look at their relationships over their life, look at the things they've done and haven't done, and kind of, you know, what my mom found to be a really kind of precious period of time where they could, you know, settle some things with relatives or friends that had been hadn't been good. And one of the phenomena that occurred during this time were dreams and visions, that the most recurrent theme in them was a sense of a journey, and often with a guide of some sort, whether, you know, a deceased loved one who'd already, you know, has already died and is coming back to kind of guide the person onward. Sometimes there are obstacles in the journey that we find in these dreams, but for the most part, the thing that really got us was after these dreams, and sometimes they're visions. Sometimes you can't really tell what's a dream and what's a vision. But the emotional impact was really, really pretty dramatic, in the sense that the people often found themselves less scared, not depressed, and kind of ready. Like there's a sense of like, okay, I kind of have a sense now of what's happening and where I'm going to go, and what's going to happen. And not that it was, you know, pearly gates and angels, you know, like very theologically orthodox or conventional, but just at a deep emotional level, people seemed to feel that now they were, you know, whatever this transition was, wherever it was going to lead them, they were ready for it. Just profound dreams. I was just, as we worked on that book, I was just blown away. I was really, wow, this stuff is, you know, and hearing that you work with, you know, dying children, like, oh my gosh, that's just such, you know, profound work.
Mm. Well, you know, it's interesting. Death can be a real teacher. And those dreams that you're talking about, and I'm wondering, from your perspective, what's one of the lessons you've learned from studying dreams? Life lessons, maybe.
Dreams are profoundly humbling, I find. Like, you know, and I've spent a lot of my life trying to understand dreams generally in my own, you know, I keep a dream journal. I pay close attention to my own dreams. And every dream that comes, every single night, is something new and something that kind of knocks me a little off center and makes me realize I don't have it all figured out, and I've got a lot of things to work on in my life. And so that to me is I think a ultimately a good thing, because I feel like it's a constant stimulus to be curious, as you mentioned, to constantly question and wonder and try to grow. You know, if put it this way, if you like the status quo, you know, if you like things just as they are, you're probably not going to like dreams, because dreams are always about, you know, not about what is, but about what might be and what we might become. So, you know, I'd say, you know, in terms of life lessons, you know, dreaming seems to encourage us to kind of go with that flow, to be aware of our own limits, but also to be open to our own possibilities beyond just the here and now.
Do you?
Oh, that's a pretty philosophical question.
Well,
I don't get asked that very often. I hope that made sense.
Yeah, no, it did. Do you want to keep going with that? Do you want to follow up there, Katie?
No, I was just, I think that was a great, I loved his answer. I keep thinking about that movie, What Dreams May Come. You know,
I keep seeing that visual.
I just keep seeing that beauty and the profound beauty and the profound, you know, just that whole curiosity of what happens when people are dying or when people are moving on or when people are in their unconscious state. What's going on up there? And
it's
really cool stuff.
Well, I love it when people try to throw logic and, you know, like math sciences is something that might not have that component.
Right.
You know, trying to really, you know, people dream a lot of different things and have a lot of wishes and thoughts and imagination and creativity and everything. And I love it when people try to explain why, but sometimes there's just no explanation.
Yeah. Oh yeah, well, there's a whole list of, you know, famous scientists and technological innovators who have drawn upon their dreams for inspiration. I mean, that might be one of those popular misconceptions about dreams that they're just crazy and only about, you know, art and aesthetics. And actually, sometimes people, you know, Albert Einstein got the idea for faster than light travel, you know, through a kind of a dream vision. Larry Page apparently came up with the idea for Google, for a big search engine, through a dream. So, you know, dreams can inspire people in all sorts of ways.
I do almost all of my thinking in dreams, and when I wake up, I have to have either a recorder or a notebook by my bed, and I write it all down the second I wake up. I mean, I have notebooks and notebooks and notebooks and notebooks of everything I dream and think about.
Well, that's, I mean, you know, like I said at the outset, I mean, there's dreams kind of, I think, are performing all sorts of functions, you know, sort of without even any conscious awareness or following them in consciousness. But when you can kind of look at them over time, like if you have a journal and you can kind of track patterns and themes over time, wow, that's where it gets,
that's
really
cool,
fun.
That's cool, isn't it?
That's kind of, go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to say that's what we've done with our kids. Our kids have little dream journals, and they're boys and they're older and everything, but they still do it. And some of their best writing, especially even in school or things, they draw upon the cool things that they've dreamed.
Yeah. But see, and that's you know, that's kind of singing my song in the sense that, you know, creating an ongoing space for kind of dream energy and feeling and such to come out in the waking world, you know, I think that helps. I think that can't help but, you know, enhance their sort of creative confidence and sense of, you know, exploring possibilities. And then I think that's got to make it easier too, if and when, you know, a scary nightmare comes and you're in that situation. Well, now you've got, you know, the dream journal and the previous drawings and such to kind of help give that some context and help make some sense out of that. So, that's great.
Well, you know, I love this one the other day. We have another pitcher. All the kids play baseball and one swims. And our 13-year-old's a pretty solid pitcher. He travels around the country and so forth. And it's going to get confusing, but the littler one, our 12-year-old, is kind of following in his footsteps, and he kind of imitates everything that Cam does. And so the other day, he got up to pitch, and no one got any hits off of him, nothing. I mean, he just struck everybody out. And he came home, and he slept in that jersey and that hat, and he was feeling like the best baseball player ever. And when he woke up the next morning, I'm like, Quade, what'd you dream about? And he's like, I was a professional baseball player. I was catching, and I am going to go to college and play baseball now and all this stuff. And that is so cool when, like, your reality goes into your dreams and inspires you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That, no, actually, a lot of athletes have dreams about their performance. Sometimes, you know, not so good where they're struggling, but then their dreams of kind of, you know, winning the championship and making the winning shot, you know, and those dreams can be just super inspiring. It's like, wow, that's kind of what dreams, you know, again, it's that they're playing with the idea of like, what would it feel like to accomplish that goal, to succeed at that? Wow, that would feel really good. I want to make that a reality. You know, I want to make that actually happen.
I think that's so cool when you're inspired by your dreams like that, because you could tell ever since then he's just like so pumped up about baseball. You can just it's
nice.
A totally different attitude. And I think it was the reality of getting in there to pitch and actually doing well, because that's pretty stressful, even as a parent, to watch. You're like, don't hit anybody. It's crazy to watch.
Wow.
But when they do it and they do it well, it's just an incredible energy, and he's so proud of himself, and he's like, I did this, and Katie, does Callie have? She must have stuff like that about dancing.
She does, but she doesn't really dream about dancing. Callie's dreams are still about things that she's afraid of. She's still dealing with some fears at night. She was. You know, she was one of those Chinese babies who was left by the side of the road and found 2 days afterwards, and we adopted her from China. So she still has recurring dreams at night. Nighttime is hard for her still. It's body memory of being left outside.
Yeah.
But we've done what you talked about, which is to recreate the story of what the dream is saying by saying, well, you know, the animals protected you, we're in nature is good, nature is loving. And so as she's grown, she goes through kind of like these levels of having to redo them. And I think that's what happens with a lot of times with dreams too. When you say that a lot of times a kid might have a dream at one developmental level, work it through, and then it comes back again at another stage.
Yeah. Oh, that's so true. And you know, in that sense, human development is much less like kind of, you know, walking up a set of stairs, like, you know, one stair after another.
Right.
But it's more of a spiral where we kind of, you know, we keep coming back to the same issues, because those are the issues of our life. But hopefully each time we come to them, we've kind of grown a little more, and we kind of work our way up the spiral, but not in a kind of linear way. So, you know, and I don't know anything more than what you said about your daughter, but, you know, to the extent that there's some kind of, you know, traumatic experience in her past, and like you say, I think that kind of bodily memory of tough experiences does stay with us. You know, that it would be unsurprising for that to be a recurrent theme throughout her life, you know, that those kinds of dreams are that kind of issue. And so that it would seem to me that the hope would be not that the dreams would necessarily stop so much as they don't sort of consume her, and that as they come, there are opportunities to see where she's grown and where new challenges are arising that she is successfully overcoming. You know, I mean, I've heard trauma therapists tell me, you know, it's not so much that you make the trauma go away so much as you kind of try to grow with it and beyond it.
You incorporate it into your life. That's really well put, because that's exactly what she's doing. She just, as it surfaces, she retells the story again to herself,
right.
And she's older, so she tells it in a different way. And
yeah.
That's trauma survivors a lot of the times do that. So, and I think dreams are really, really important to people who have had traumatic experiences.
Yeah, well, and one of the real interesting findings from that whole realm of research is how in many cases of post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, full-on PTSD, people will initially have they'll just be besieged by recurrent nightmares that are very graphic, direct replayings of whatever happened, whether it's, you know, a wartime thing or an accident or an assault or whatever, just kind of playing that again and again, like a repeated memory flash. But then over time, and with healing and with, you know, therapy, if hopefully it's available, sometimes people have PTSD and they never get any help, which is really sad. But, you know, often with time and healing and help, those graphic repetitive nightmares change and become more kind of dreamy. And so there still might be kind of recurrent scary dreams, but it's no longer kind of that just like direct, like exactly the way it happened. The borders become a little fuzzier and other details come in and other aspects of life and you know, enter into the dream. And what seems to be happening is the mind, it takes some time to kind of weave that traumatic experience into an ongoing sense of self, to literally to make meaning of it. That seems to be what dreams do, is they help us make meaning of experiences. And a trauma, you know, initially is like, oh my God, that has no meaning. I can't process that. I can't find any way to include that in my sense of a coherent world. And you know, that's really the challenge of healing from trauma, is trying to find a way to go on living even though that horrible traumatic thing happened. And so as the dreams change, and like I said, kind of become dreamier, they seem to help in that process of kind of almost like, I don't know, digesting the trauma. It's like you kind of like, you know, there it is, and you kind of try to find a way to grow beyond it. So one of these things that I think shows how dreaming is kind of almost like a natural form of therapy, kind of helping us make sense of things that are challenging and difficult.
Do you ever have anybody say that somebody who has passed away has contacted them in their dream?
Oh yeah, like daily. I mean, that's, yes, that's a really common theme, even though it, you know, it doesn't happen every night for people, but when it does, it's very memorable. Yeah.
Yeah, people, I don't think it's something that people like to openly talk about.
Yeah, well, sometimes people are, it makes them anxious because they don't know what that means, how that could happen.
Is it a ghost? Is it something in your mind? I mean, people almost feel crazy when that happens.
Exactly. And as with so many things, you know, I try to take a, you know, a pragmatic approach. It's like, well, you don't really know where that came from ultimately, but you know, what matters is how to make you feel. You know, and what do you learn from that? What does that open up for you? And many times it's, you know, people are grateful. It's like, oh, I got to see, you know, my mother one more time, or, you know, my uncle, never got to say goodbye, or, you know, my grandfather told me that he's in an okay place. Whatever the content and wherever it came from, the effects are often reassuring in a sense, like, okay, I can, even though the person is gone physically, I still have an emotional connection with them, that still lives.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe that's a part of our minds, you know, Freud would say that's a wish fulfillment, you know, that's in his theory, that would be just our minds creating a fantasy to make ourselves feel better. And you know what, I'm not even sure that's a bad thing, even if that's true. But whatever it is, I think it's those kinds of dreams are, like I said, you know, reminders that physical death isn't the end of a relationship.
Right. And
there's more to that, yeah.
There's one really important point about that, too, that I've heard people feel like there's something wrong with them when they don't have a dream about a loved one who's passed.
Yeah.
and they feel really sad, and they feel like, what's wrong? Didn't they know I loved them? And it's so important for people to know, no, don't beat yourself up like that.
Yeah.
It may mean that you don't need the reassurance. You don't know. And it's really, dreams are not something you can control.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you just open yourself, but if they come, they come. If not, then you can just trust they're doing what they need to do. They mm-hmm. our dreams know where to find us. That's what I always say. Like, if our dreams really need to tell us, give us a message, they know where we are.
What's the difference between a dream and a vision? Or is there or not?
Simple distinction would be, dreams happen at night while we're asleep. Visions happen during the day while we're awake. But visions are, when they occur, and they don't occur as often as dreams generally. But sometimes people say, well, they're in a state that's not really waking or sleeping. So, and dreaming, it should also be said, we know this from brain research, the visual processing parts of the brain are super active during REM sleep, which is the part of the sleep cycle when we're often dreaming. So dreams themselves are very visionary in terms of just how our brains are functioning. This is speculative, but sometimes I think that waking visions are actually bursts of dreaming that are kind of entering into or intruding into waking awareness, so.
Well, you got to say that again for me. You lost me.
Well, dreaming is such a. Yeah. It's there's no clear answer. This is just sort of my current thought about it. But it's that when we're asleep and dreaming, we have this kind of internal visionary, I call it an autonomous visionary capacity. That's my technical term for it, that we have within us this kind of ability to generate, intensely realistic visual experiences. That happens in our dreams every night. And a vision, what we call a vision that happens in waking, I'm speculating maybe a bit of that dreaming visionary power breaking into waking.
Cool.
Maybe not.
Still cool. Cool thought.
Yeah.
For sure. We've got about 2 minutes left. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you wanted to mention that we just completely missed?
I don't think so. God, we covered a lot of ground here, and you guys have such interesting experiences of your own. It's really fun chatting with you.
Good. All right. Well, let's do this then. Let's tell people about the book one more time. It's Children's Dreams, Understanding the Most Memorable Dreams and Nightmares of Childhood, and it's by Kelly and Patricia Bulkley. And how can people find you are you in social media?
Yeah. I have a website, kellybulkley.com. I write blog posts for Huffington Post, so you can find me there. What else?
Are you on Twitter at all?
I don't do Twitter. I've got a database that I'm working on. I'm always interested if people are interested in, and when I hear someone who's been keeping track of their dreams for a long time, that piques my interest. But so you look up sleepanddreamdatabase.org. That's all one word. That's my scientific research database and fun stuff up there. So yeah.
Okay. Katie, did you want to add anything before we go?
No, I just was curious, what's next?
What's next?
That's a great question.
Well, I'm working with a guy who's developing a mobile phone app to enable people to record their dreams, like a voice-to-text function that you'd be able to wake up, pick up your phone, talk your dream into it, and then all sorts of interpretive fun things would happen after that.
Oh, what a great idea.
So it's called Shadow.
I want to be the tester of that one.
Yeah, I'll pass it along. We're just about there. I'm an advisor to the process. It's called Shadow, and more to hear about that. But it's a fun one. I'm looking forward to working on that.
So. Awesome. Yeah, all right. Well, thank you so much for being our guest. We're completely out of time. And I just want
thank
to thank
you.
Everybody for listening, and thank you, Kelly, and tell your mom we said hi, and thank you
Will
for
do.
Writing a cool book. On Thursday, May 2nd at 1 p.m., we have author Gabe Berman. He's the author of Live Like a Fruit Fly, and he's going to come back and talk to us about the fruit fly strikes back. So that should be pretty funny. All right, guys. It makes me laugh. All right, take care, everybody. Have a great day. Thank you, Kelly.
You too.
Enjoy today.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.